How did Jeff Bezos realize you could sell anything on the internet? Why did Bill Gates create Control-Alt-Delete? How did synchronized swimming prepare Christine Lagarde for international politics? What made Bob Iger bet big on Marvel? And what inspired Diane von Furstenberg to create the wrap dress? On the David Rubenstein Show, Peer-to-Peer Conversations, I uncover the untold stories of the world's most successful leaders. Listen now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to For the Ages, a history podcast presented by the New York Historical Society and hosted by David Rubenstein. Join us as he deftly explores the rich and complex history of the United States with some of the nation's foremost historians and creative thinkers. Because history matters.
Hello, I'm David Rubenstein. I'm pleased to be joined in conversation by Candace Millard, a distinguished author of numerous history books. Today, we are discussing her book, The River of Doubt, Theodore Roosevelt's Darkest Journey. Candace, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, David.
So how did you get the idea for writing a book about Teddy Roosevelt after he left the presidency and doing a trip down the Amazon?
Well, I was working at National Geographic magazine at the time. I just got married and I was going to be moving to Kansas City. And I was looking for a book idea. I wanted something that I would really, really feel passionate about. And actually, a friend of mine, James Chase, was working on a book about the election of 1912. And he said, have you ever heard of this trip that Roosevelt took down this unmapped river in the Amazon after that election? And I really didn't know much about it. If you see any biography of Roosevelt, it's just a few pages. It kind of skips over that because, as you said, it's after his active political career. But I started doing research and I was just blown away. You know, three men died on this trip. Roosevelt nearly took his own life. It's, as you say, it's set in the Amazon. And I had been steeped in stories about science and adventure and exploration. So it just seemed the perfect fit for me.
And how long did the research take? And what was the basis for the research? Was it diaries or letters, or where did you get the information?
The research took 3 to 4 years. Most of that archivally was at the Library of Congress and the presidential papers. They have his son Kermit's diary, for instance. They also, at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, they have the ornithologist George Terry, who was on this trip with them. They have his diary. They also have a lot of like physical collections that they gathered on this trip. And the Theodore Roosevelt collection at Harvard has a lot of his papers. And then I went to this river, which is obviously deep, deep in the Amazon.
I assume it was less dangerous when you went there than when Teddy Roosevelt went.
It was less dangerous in that I had modern technology. You know, to get there, I had to rent my own plane to get there, which had its own dangers. But I had GPS, I had a satellite phone, things like that. But it's very, very difficult to reach this river still. It's the Amazon is dangerous. I mean, when I was at National Geographic, there was a scientist who was killed. He was bitten by a poisonous snake in the Amazon. Soon after I got back, two photographers for National Geographic, freelance photographers, were killed in a plane crash over the Rio Negro. So things can still go terribly wrong.
Okay. So fortunately, you came back safe. And
I did.
Not to go to the Amazon, listening to what you just told me. But let's talk about the basic context in which this is set. So after Teddy Roosevelt finishes his term as president, he went on a long hunting safari to Africa. Was that a trip in which he was ever in danger? And what did he accomplish on that trip?
So, you know, Roosevelt was many things, as we know, but one of the central things and one of the earliest things that defined his personality was his passion for nature. He was a naturalist of the purest kind and had been since he was a child. And he was extremely, extremely knowledgeable. And so, yes, he went to Africa and he brought back the largest collection of natural history that the Smithsonian had ever had from Africa. So it was largely a collecting trip. I mean, there were certain dangers, but it was nothing compared to the River of Doubt.
So after he returns from Africa, he concludes that his handpicked successor, President William Howard Taft, is not following the course that Teddy Roosevelt wanted for him to follow, which is to say, maybe more anti-business than Taft wanted to be. Roosevelt decides to seek the Republican nomination from his handpicked successor. What happens then?
So he divides the Republican Party as he knew that he would. So first he tries to get the Republican nomination. They say, look, we would love for you to run again, but we have to give it to the incumbent now. So if you could just wait, and being Roosevelt, he's not going to wait. So he forms his own party, an independent party, which became known as the Bull Moose Party. And he divides the Republican vote, and he puts a Democrat, Woodrow Wilson, in the White House for the first time in 16 years.
So in that election, Wilson wins. So he's governor of New Jersey. Roosevelt actually finishes second, and I think Taft finished third. So he's finished with politics, at least for the time being, it's thought. He's only 56 years old. How did the idea for a trip to the rainforest of the Amazon come to him?
Well, first he was invited to go on a speaking tour in South America, and he decides to go. And then he had had a friend who was a Catholic priest at Notre Dame, a Father Zom, who had been wanting to get him to go to South America with him for years. And so he says, okay, you know, while I'm there, I'll go on a collecting trip, sort of like I did in Africa. But what happens is he gets to South America, he meets with the foreign minister, and the foreign minister said, well, yeah, you know, you could go on a very average, sedate collecting trip, or you could do something interesting. We've just found the headwaters of this river that nobody knows where it goes. It's not on any map, and you could find out. And being Theodore Roosevelt, there's no way he's going to turn that down.
Okay, so he decides he's going to go down then and maybe look at where the source of the Amazon is and see where this river goes to. But was it considered a life-threatening type of trip?
Absolutely. It was incredibly dangerous, especially because they were so ill-prepared. So again, they go all the way to South America thinking that they're just going to go on a collecting trip on very well-known rivers with lots of support. And they get there and they completely change what they're going to do. But more than that, the man that Father Zom had chosen to outfit this Amazonian expedition was a failed Arctic explorer. So this guy had failed horribly in the Arctic, and that was his only experience exploring. And so he packs just all the wrong things, really, for any Amazonian trip, much less a trip of this magnitude.
Where was the trip supposed to start, and when, and how many Roosevelts actually were supposed to go on the trip?
So it was just going to be Theodore, and but then his son Kermit, his second son, was already living and working in Brazil. He had been there for about a year, helping to build bridges. He was really an extraordinary young man. He was just turned 24. He had finished Harvard in 2.5 years. He spoke half a dozen languages. He was very much like his father in many ways, very adventurous. And he didn't want to go on this trip, but he was worried about his father when he found out the change of plans. And so he ends up going along, and it takes them 2.5 months just to reach the headwaters of this river. And then they don't really know how long it's going to take them to make it out because they have no idea where it goes.
So did he plan to write about the trip for somebody?
He did. He had a contract with Scrivener. And so he wrote a series of articles that before they got to the actual River of Doubt, each way, and when they would stop, they would send it back with runners and other porters and things. They would send back his articles to be published in serial form.
So the trip starts actually in New York and goes through Barbados and then on to Brazil. And then on the trip down the River of Doubt, how many people were in the traveling party?
So to get to the river, they had more than 100 men. But by the time they get to the river, they realize they have to really, really narrow it down. And so even some of the officers they had brought with them from the United States were either sent home or sent on a different river. And so you end up with 21 men. There are 16, what are called camaradas, porters and paddlers, and the rest were officers.
So the Brazilian government offers somebody to help Teddy Roosevelt navigate the River of Doubt. Who is that? And what was his role in the whole River of Doubt exploration effort before?
His name is Colonel Candido Rondon, and he was really an extraordinary character. So he was born extremely poor. He was orphaned before he was 2 years old. His father had been part indigenous, and then his mother had been Brazilian. And so he made his way up the ranks of the Brazilian military to become the commander of its Strategic Telegraph Commission, whose job it was to try to string a telegraph line through the Amazon rainforest, which you can imagine was extremely difficult and dangerous. And so it was really hard to get people to join his commission. Often most of the men who worked for him were taken out of prisons. He had to pay them seven times what other men in the military were paid because they were constantly dying from illness, from starvation, and also from attacks by indigenous people.
So what was the colonel's real ambition or desire in going along on this trip? Was he trying to map the river in some way?
He was trying to map all of the Amazon. In fact, you know, while he's stringing the telegraph line through, he was very carefully and conscientiously mapping as he went along. And so to him, you know, he didn't necessarily want to be traveling with a former president of the United States, but it was just another part of this bigger picture that he was willing to sacrifice his life for if necessary. So he took mapping this river extremely seriously.
So they go for how long before they get to the River of Doubt?
2.5 months.
2.5 months before they get to the River of Doubt. And is that relatively safe, that part of it?
It is, but it's dispiriting. You know, they find out they have way, way too many supplies and all the wrong stuff. This guy Fiala, the Arctic explorer, he packed things like, you know, chutney and teas and things instead of, you know, real food that they could eat. And also everything's too heavy. Their boats are too heavy. They have to get rid of their boats. Their mules are dying. And so they reach this river and they don't even have boats. They finally just have to buy boats from the Nambaquara. And they're just, you know, basically hauled out tree trunks.
So how long was it likely to take or expected to take to go down the River of Doubt? And was there enough food and other provisions for a trip of this length?
Well, they hoped that it wouldn't take more than a few months, but they really didn't have any idea. I mean, they sent people at different places to wait for them just in case they came out in those. But really, a lot of it was just a hope and a prayer. And no, they weren't prepared at all because they had gone there thinking that they could survive largely by hunting. You know, you have Theodore Roosevelt, he's this known hunter. You have Candido Rondon, who knows the Amazon so well. And you're in the richest ecosystem on Earth. And so you would think you wouldn't have a problem finding something to eat. But this is the Amazon. I mean, it's highly, highly evolved evolutionarily to either be a predator or to not be prey. And so everything is hiding. I mean, if you go there, which I did, you maybe see a few monkeys high up in the canopy. You see a few caimans kind of sinking down into the river. But anything you can eat, good luck finding it. And they very quickly found out that they were in trouble.
So at this point, Roosevelt is a former president of the United States. Is he treated by the other 20 people like a semi-god because he's a famous person? Or they let him do all the chores? Does he clean up? Does he help carry stuff? What does he really do?
He refuses to be treated any differently, and especially treated any differently from Candido Rondon. So, for instance, at one point, they're all sitting around and they only have one chair and they offer it to Roosevelt. And he says, "I'll sit when Rondon also has a chair." And he insists on helping all along. And the camaradas come to really love him because he's constantly giving them his share of the little bit of chocolate that they have. He's a great storyteller. He tells stories to entertain them every night. You know, even when people try to stop him, he's getting in the river to try to free canoes. He's helping them cut down trees to make these corduroy roads that they had to haul the canoes along through the forest. So he's very, very active and involved.
So I assume there were a lot of mosquitoes there. How do they deal with all the mosquitoes?
There are so many mosquitoes there. Let me tell you, I mean, when I was there, I was just absolutely eaten alive. And I had a lot more to work with than they did. They had something called fly dope, which wasn't fantastic, but it helped. And to try to fight off malaria, they had quinine. But, you know, everyone was constantly getting sick. In fact, several of the people were far too sick even before they reached the river. They had to send them back. So, yeah, that was a real problem.
So is it better to say down the River of Doubt or up the River of Doubt?
They were descending it.
So they have carved out kind of tree trunks.
Yes.
How many do they actually have?
So that changed. So they began with like I think they had five at the beginning. So this river, if you think about the Amazon River, anyone who's been on the Amazon River, you know, it runs from west to east and it's really wide and sluggish. But the River of Doubt runs south to north, and it begins in the Brazilian highlands high up, and it's going down, and it's super fast, and it's incredibly twisting, and it's studded with rapids after rapids. I would say class 4, class 5 rapids. So they were constantly losing their canoes. They were just getting smashed to splinters.
So when you go down a rapid in this kind of boat, you can maybe lose the canoe,
right?
Lose your life. But sometimes to prevent that, they do what you call, I think it's called portage.
That's right. Yes.
And they put all their belongings, I guess, somewhere, and they carry the boat down the embankment of the river. And how hard is it to carry these things? And how long did they have to carry these boats?
It's incredibly hard, because if you think about the Amazon, you know, obviously a vegetation likes light. And so much of the Amazon, it's dense, dense, dense. So all the vegetation is super thick, especially along the banks of a river, right? Because then they can get light. That's the one opening. You're not just like, oh, here's a nice bank. I mean, you have to slash your way through first to kind of open up a place. And then you have to make these kind of, they call them corduroy roads, where they would cut down trees and they would have different like branches and limber that they would tie two men. They take ropes and tie two men to these really heavy canoes, and then they would try to pull them. Meanwhile, they would have other men carrying all of the supplies ahead, and then they would meet, and then they would try again. But they just had to do it sometimes because the rapids were so dangerous.
Now, one time, one of the Brazilian workers is lost going down the river due to something that Kermit Roosevelt does.
That's right. It was extremely dangerous part of the river. And Rendon told them, just pull over and we're going to have to, you know, just figure out what our next move is. And Kermit either didn't hear him say that or just thought, it's fine, I can figure it out. So he's in a canoe with two other men, and he ordered them to go. There was an island in the middle of the river, to go over to that island. But there were several whirlpools that they kept getting caught in. And then they would make their way out, and they would get caught into another. And finally, their canoe is tipped over, and they're all thrown into this extremely dangerous water. Kermit and the other man made it out alive, but one of the camaradas, Simplicio, was drowned, and they never found his body.
So in Roosevelt's case, is he considered the head of the expedition, or is it Rondon who's the head of the expedition?
They are co-commanders.
Co-commanders. So as he goes along on this trip, is Roosevelt writing, though he obviously can't send the information back right away, is he writing? And is he also collecting specimens or other zoological work?
He is. He's writing as often as he can, and when he's not too ill and when they're not in too much immediate danger, he does. He sits down and he puts big gloves on and a sort of netting over his head to help fight off the insects so he can write in peace.
So who's worried more about their health? Is Kermit worried more about his father's health, or is President Roosevelt more worried about Kermit's health?
I think it's pretty equal at this point. It's always a changing relationship between a father and a son as the father gets older and the son gets older. Kermit obviously went in this expedition because he was concerned for his father's health and safety. And as it becomes more and more dangerous and people begin to die and they feel like they fear that they're going to starve, Theodore obviously becomes more concerned for his son's life.
At what point does Teddy Roosevelt contract malaria?
Pretty early on. He, kind of about the same time, he gets malaria and he also is injured. They have a canoe that's caught in a whirlpool and they all rush in to try to free it. And he is one of the first in, and it whirls around and it hits him really hard on the leg. He's bleeding terribly, and it very quickly gets infected, as you can imagine, in an environment like the Amazon. And he becomes so ill that he can barely sit up. And they get to a point, in the river, where Rondon, who's the most experienced member of the expedition, says, you know, there's no way we can go down in canoes in this part of it. We have to basically strike out into the rainforest, every man for himself.
So did Roosevelt have a pre-existing leg injury, or it just happened here?
He did. He had it on the opposite leg that he was injured. So years earlier, he had been in a carriage that had been hit by a trolley car. And one of his Secret Service agents was killed. And he was really badly injured, his opposite leg. And now this leg is injured as well. So there's no way he can even walk, much less fight his way through the rainforest.
So if he can't walk and he can't get through a rainforest, you know, even of a not that dense one, what does he decide to do? Does he say, look, I'm going to go back to where I came from, or I'll go check into a hotel or something, or what?
Well, you know, Roosevelt had been on never a trip this difficult and dangerous, but he had been on many expeditions in the past, and he always brought with him a lethal dose of morphine because he always said he never wanted to be a danger to the other men in his expedition. If he were injured or he were so ill he couldn't go on, he didn't want them to risk their lives to try to carry him out. And so one night he calls his son Kermit and the ornithologist George Cherry into his tent, and he says, you go on, I'm stopping here. His plan was to take this lethal dose of morphine and to die there in the Amazon rainforest so the other men wouldn't endanger themselves by trying to bring him out.
So I assume Kermit doesn't want that to happen. He feels responsible for his father. So what actually happens?
So that's exactly why Theodore Roosevelt didn't end up dying in the Amazon. So his son, Kermit, says, as you know, most children would, absolutely not. I'm going to find a way to get you out. And other men by that point, they trust Kermit because no one worked harder on this expedition than Kermit. He was in the river so much trying to free canoes that his shoes rotted off his feet. And so he said, I know I can get us through these rapids. Just trust me. And they did trust him. And Roosevelt realized, in the end, the best way to save my son is to let my son save me.
So what happens is his son works hard to save him. And do they carry him down through the forest, or do they put him on a boat at some point? How does he get further along?
It's painstaking and very, very difficult and dangerous. But they're able to lower these canoes through these sort of around the edges of these rapids, and they carry Roosevelt, and they get through this one particularly difficult set of rapids.
So they continue, but what about the leg? I mean, the leg isn't getting better just because they're moving further along. Is there a danger that it might have to be amputated, or what happened?
It is a danger. The most of the danger is that this infection will enter the bloodstream and he will die from this infection. They do have a doctor on the expedition, somebody that they all really trust and respect, but he's obviously limited to what he can do. So basically, when they're traveling, they have Roosevelt lying down in his canoe, and they try to construct a little tent to protect him from the sun and the heat, and they just try to keep going.
You know, it sounds like a bit of a reality TV show almost, what they're doing. But in addition to the reality TV show of just trying to get down the river, there are natives in the area. Natives of the Amazon area, are they dangerous? Are they trying to attack at any point this traveling party, or they leave them alone?
Right. So these people are called the Cinta Larga. Cinta Larga means wide belt in Portuguese, and it's in reference to these broad strips of bark that they would wrap around their abdomens to protect themselves during war. And they had no contact with the outside world, and in fact, wouldn't have any contact with the outside world until the early 1970s. And they are watching, we find out later on. I was able to interview some Cinta Larga, who this expedition has become part of their tribal history. And they were watching Roosevelt and his men all the time. And they didn't see the Cinta Larga, but the Cinta Larga were watching them. And at one point, Rondon was in an area by himself. He was hunting with his dog, and the Cinta Larga attacked. Arrows were shot, and they killed his dog, which was actually one of his closest companions. It was really very devastating to him. But Rondon knew the best thing to do, even after this terrible loss, was to leave gifts for the Cinta Larga in the hopes that it would send the message that, you know, we're not here as an enemy. We're not a threat to you. You know, please let us pass by peacefully.
And did anybody ever find out why they let them pass? Why not just attack and kill all of them?
Well, that was exactly the question that I had, David, when I started researching this. In fact, when I started researching it, if you read any book about that mentions this trip before my book, they just say they're a group of indigenous tribesmen that attacked them. So the question was, first of all, who were they? And secondly, as you ask, why didn't they just massacre them all? I mean, first out of fear, but secondly, they had so many valuable supplies. And what I learned from interviewing a group of Cinta Larga in the Amazon is they said that the reason is because for the Cinta Larga, you don't have a chief of the tribe. Essentially, each man is the chief of his family. So when you have a big decision to make, you're going to move the village or you're going to go to war, you have to have a consensus. And they said that with Roosevelt and his men, they didn't have a consensus. Some of them wanted to attack and some of them were afraid to attack and didn't want to. And so because of that, and because of the structure of the Cinta Larga, Roosevelt and his men survived that threat, at least.
So when did they begin to realize, after all these travails, that they were getting close to the end of the trip? They're getting to the point where they wanted to be at the beginning of the river. And tell us what rubber tappers are.
So rubber tappers are people who tap the trees to get rubber out of them. It's a tough way to make a living, but that's what they were doing along the farther southern reaches of the River of Doubt. And so they start to see signs of outside activity, you know, signs of things that obviously you would need an axe for, or you know, clearly things that hadn't been taken from the Amazon itself that were being used. And so finally, they meet up with some of these rubber tappers who help them. But also before that, they also endure a murder. You know, one of their men murders another man. So these men had been through a lot. And by the time they get anywhere near help in the outside world.
So in other words, these are not indigenous people. These are...
Yes, these are Brazilians, right?
Rubber tappers that make their living by tapping out the rubber from trees. They realize they must be close to civilization.
That's right. They're starving and they're in rags and they're sick and they're terrified that Theodore Roosevelt is going to die. And so they're thrilled when they see the possibility of help.
Did they meet actual rubber tappers who gave them food, or the rubber tapper just left food behind that they took?
At one point, they did find just a shack where there was some food of one of the rubber tappers. And a lot of the men did want to take the food, but Rondon refused to let them do that. And so they continued on. And then they saw a man who was on a canoe. And first, when he first saw the expedition, was frightened that it was the Cinta Larga. And so he starts paddling away, and Kermit has to stand up waving his metal helmet, you know, asking for help. And so he takes them to where they can get some food, especially when these people realize that this is an official government expedition, then they help them.
When did the trip finally end, and how long did it take to get to the end?
So it ends in mid-April. It was a little more than 3 months that they're actually on the River of Doubt. They start out with 21 men and come to the end with three fewer than they began with.
Three fewer. One was murdered. The person that did the murdering ran away. They never caught him. And then one was, in effect, drowned. Is that right?
That's right. And in fact, the murderer, after he murdered another member of the expedition who had caught him stealing food, he fled into the jungle and they just continued on. But then a couple of days later, they see him clinging to the bank and begging them to take him with them, even though he knows that if he goes with them, they'll take him back and try him for murder. But they leave him to certain death in the rainforest.
So when Teddy Roosevelt gets to the end of the trip, are there some doctors there that can actually fix his leg, or what happens to the leg?
Right. It takes a while for it to heal. Again, it's less they're afraid of him losing the leg and more they're afraid of him dying from infection. But they kind of quickly are able to, you know, get him some medicine and get him some help. And he's also, I mean, he's lost a lot of weight. He's really thin. He's really fragile. And he never really recovers from this expedition. So he dies just a few years later when he's only 60 years old.
How was the trip received back in the U.S.? Did people say you did a great thing? You actually discovered where the River of Doubt begins? And how was it received in Brazil?
Well, there was a lot of skepticism, especially by well-known explorers at the National Geographic Society, the Royal Geographical Society, because this river is nearly 1,000 miles long, and it's a principal tributary of the Madeira River, which is a principal tributary of the Amazon. And so it's a significant river. And they said that, you know, that's ridiculous. There's no way this former president found this river that the rest of us didn't know existed. And they said things like, oh, that couldn't be because there are mountains there. And, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, he loved a challenge, and he said, okay, great. You know, I'm happy to tell you all about it. So he went to the National Geographic Society to speak, and then he went to the Royal Geographical Society in London to speak. And he said, you know, the great thing about rivers is they're still there. So you can go, if you don't believe me, you can go find out for yourself. And there were several, there were three expeditions that tried to retrace Roosevelt and Rondon's expedition. The first turned back part of the way in out of fear. The second disappeared into the Amazon and were never heard from again. We don't know what happened to them. And the third was able to successfully retrace a river. And they said it was just as Rondon and Roosevelt said it was.
So do you think Roosevelt's life was shortened because of this trip? He lived only to 60 years old, but he had lived a very exciting and full life. But do you think this trip was something that shortened his life?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. You know, he never really recovered. He was in and out of the hospital for years after that. At one point, he was told that he would have to live the rest of his life in a wheelchair. And he said, that's okay. I can work that way too. You know, he used to say that he was always willing to pay the piper for a good dance. And he considered this a very good dance.
So what ultimately happens to Rondon?
So Rondon actually lives to be 90 years old. Amazingly, he lived this very long life. And part of what he felt passionately about trying to map the Amazon, but he believed that the best way to help the people who lived in the Amazon, the indigenous people who lived in the Amazon, was to find where they were and make contact with them and try to bring them into Brazilian society. Now, we know today that that's actually can be very, very dangerous. And they obviously should be allowed to continue to live as they want. He thought that that was for the best. But I don't think there's any question that he is considered one of the greatest explorers in history. I mean, Roosevelt lumped him with the top five explorers in history. There's an entire region of the Amazon called Rondônia that's named after him. Albert Einstein nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize. There are streets and schools and, like I said, in this entire region of the Amazon named after him.
What happens to Kermit Roosevelt in the end?
Kermit is really the most tragic story within this story. He, you know, was very devoted to his father and was devastated when his father died a few years later. And he kind of spins out of control. He was more, in some ways, more like Roosevelt's brother, Elliot, who was Eleanor Roosevelt's father. He was kind of a poet, and he was sort of a sensitive soul, and he becomes an alcoholic. He had been engaged when he was on the River of Doubt to this young woman named Belle Willard, and they did marry, but he was constantly leaving and having affairs, and she was, you know, trying to find him. And so finally, during World War II, he's in Alaska. They're trying to just find a way to keep him busy. And one night he is alone in his room and he takes out his gun and he shoots himself in the head. He kills himself.
What would you say is the main scientific achievement of this trip? Was the mapping of the river or the fact that they discovered where the river started? What would you say is the main scientific achievement of this trip?
I think it would definitely have to be the mapping of the river. You know, Rondon had found the source, but had no idea where it went, which is why he named it the River of Doubt, Rio da Dúvida. But he, like I said, he, to Roosevelt's great frustration, insisted on carefully mapping and doing this really careful strategic mapping of this river. And if you look on any map of South America, there it is, this nearly 1,000-mile-long river that no one knew existed before this expedition.
And the river is renamed by the authority of the Brazilian government in honor of Teddy Roosevelt. Is that right?
That's right. It's the Rio Roosevelt.
Did Teddy Roosevelt have any second thoughts about going on this trip?
No, he didn't. You know, he said it was his last chance to be a boy, but I think it was more serious than that. You know, again, he was this great naturalist and that was appealing to him, but also he wanted to do something scientific of significance. And this was enormous. You know, I mean, it's hard to imagine any other president doing this, or certainly any modern president going off into this completely unmapped part of the world, and you don't hear from them for months, and you have no idea if they're going to survive or not. And they come back having mapped this very long and pretty important river. It's just extraordinary.
So this is an incredible story. I'd just like to ask you one final question, if you would talk about something not completely related to this, but when we've talked before, you mentioned that you idolized a bit from afar David McCullough.
Yes.
And you might describe how David McCullough inspired you and how, when you had a difficult time in your life, in effect, that inspiration enabled you to keep going.
I did. I had a great admiration for David McCullough, as so many people do, and especially the kind of writing that I wanted to do. I read everything he wrote, but I've always found books not just educational and interesting, but sort of as companions and as a comfort. And so 18 years ago, I had a child who was born with neuroblastoma, and which is a type of children's cancer. They found the tumor in utero. So she was born and immediately, you know, went into surgery. Then she ended up having 8 rounds of chemo. And there are many times when we thought she wasn't going to survive. And so many, many nights when I would be alone with her in her hospital room and terrified, I would open one of David McCullough's books, and whether it was Truman or John Adams, and find comfort there and lose myself, even for a short time, in the stories that he told so beautifully. And so years later, when I was at the National Book Festival on the Mall, Cokie Roberts introduced me to him, because he was the one person I wanted to meet. And I was so just starstruck, and he was so kind and gracious. And I wanted to tell him what it had meant to me and what the way he had helped me in such a personal way, even though he didn't know it. But I was a little too starstruck to say it. And I really regretted it a few years ago when we lost him.
And what happened to that daughter?
She just started her first year of college at Elon University in North Carolina. She's a picture of health. We're very lucky.
Great.
Thank you.
So this is a great story, and I highly recommend this book for those who want a really great adventure story about one of our great presidents. We've been in discussion today with Candace Millard on her book, The River of Doubt, Theodore Roosevelt's Darkest Journey. Candace, thank you very much for speaking with us today. It was a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
On behalf of the New York Historical Society, thank you for joining us for another episode of For the Ages, a history podcast hosted by David Rubenstein. We hope you enjoyed it and come back for more. Thanks for your support. You can share your thoughts at public.programs@nyhistory.org.